future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Hey everybody, welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop Live. Yep, this is our live call-in show for August 24th, 2020. Out the Coop Live is a space to talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, from right in our own backyards and from across the country. Our live show is the latest addition to our weekly Friday show. On Friday, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yep, and you can get both by subscribing to our Podbean, our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. But you can only join the live conversation right here through the Podbean app on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Now, this will be available in our regular podcast stream, but if you're someone who wants to call in, you want to be part of the conversation, you got to go in through the Podbean app. It's just the way they do it. You can help support the show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And you can show us some love right during this live show, too. If you log into the Podbean app, right, listening to this show, you can click on this little gift icon at the bottom of your screen and send us like a virtual cup of coffee, a love balloon, some roses, and also gold mic. All you have to do is fill your virtual pockets with Podbean's golden beans. That's what they call like their virtual currency, right? The gifts you send are kind of like, you know, sticking a buck or two into the tip jar to help us support expand this podcast. When we close out tonight's show, you can check out the Rick Smith Show. Get on over there and always support Rick's show. His live stream starts at 9 p.m. Eastern and on his YouTube channel, Twitter, Facebook site, everywhere. Right? And a special shout out, as always, to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter, @SongADayMan. That's with two N's, @SongADayMan on Twitter. And tell him that Raging Chicken sent you. Just a quick note for those folks who normally tune into our YouTube stream. We're not streaming to YouTube now. If you were on last week or listening to our podcast on Friday, I'm in the process of switching computers. So we haven't made the full switch over on the OBS system for the broadcast.
Which makes coordination between the Western firms and India easier.
I'm hearing something. Indians can work. I'm hearing some feedback going on from someone. Sorry. On tonight's show, we'll be talking with three students who are organizing because of and in spite of the global COVID-19 pandemic. Nick Thatcher is a political science and philosophy major at Kutztown University. Nick is one of the founding student organizers with the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights at Kutztown. Nick was also a student leader in Kutztown's chapter of Students for Bernie, where he cut his teeth in organizing, phone banking, and political action. And Kutztown faculty and students held a protest this week against KU's reopening plans, in which students and faculty donned plague doctor masks. Yes, you may have seen the images all over social media. It was freaking awesome. We have Kyle Nelson. Kyle is organizing with East Stroudsburg Student Solidarity Committee. Kyle is a senior at ESU, and he's from Philly. He's an events chair for the African Student Association and the public relations chair of the Political Science Club. Kyle is double majoring in political science and philosophy with the hopes of going to law school. Plans on continuing his advocacy through civil rights law, criminal defense law, and human rights law. The Student Solidarity Committee is organizing in solidarity with food service workers on campus who are in the middle of a union organizing drive. And we just got some freaking awesome news right before we went onto the show tonight, is that East Stroudsburg has agreed to neutrality in the card check process of organizing the union at ESU. So, freaking amazing, amazing. Right off the top, I think we need one of these for that. No doubt. Fantastic. And the Solidarity Committee, one of the reasons I wanted to have Kyle on is the Solidarity Committee released what they are calling the SWORD Plan, the Students and Workers Organizing for Real Defenses, which is a model for how we should be building solidarity in the wake of the pandemic. And that the card check neutrality is absolutely huge, and we'll have Kyle talk a little bit about that. And last but certainly not least, Jack Fletcher is the co-founder of the Student Coalition for Change at Temple University. Kyle is a junior pre-law major at Temple and the co-founder of the Temple Coalition for Change, as I just said. I'm just repeating myself at this point. If you've been following the news, you know that students and faculty at Temple have been on fire with their organizing against the administration's decision to return to face-to-face classes this fall. Last week, students, faculty, parents, and staff and community members held a car caravan urging the university's administration to cancel their plans to return to face-to-face classes. Of course, they didn't, so the protests continue. So welcome, everybody. Welcome, Nick. Welcome, Kyle. And welcome, Jack. I'm so glad you could join us tonight.
I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, fantastic. So here's what I'm just curious. This before we get into the specifics of the organizing work that you're doing, I'm just curious what it's like going back to classes this fall. I mean, what's that experience like been like so far? I mean, maybe we could start with, I mean, just Nick. I mean, you know, today was Kutztown's first day, and I know there's been changes in people's schedules up to like literally this morning, not to mention the enormous like Zoom explosion that took place that took down everybody's Zoom stuff. But what's been going back to campus been like at KU's campus?
Yeah, I just want to say it's good to be here. So I guess the way to kind of describe the way that things have been happening is chaotic, to say the least. You know, about a week ago, I'm sure as many of your viewers probably know, Kutztown essentially decided that the social distancing measures which they put in place in so many of their classrooms was actually not it was actually 5 feet instead of 6 feet. And so what they ended up doing is they realized that, you know, dozens, if not at least like 100 classes were actually not able to occur physically the same way that they thought they could with social distancing precautions. And so, you know, so many classes had to switch to online at the last minute. And, you know, I would say part of the reason why it's so chaotic is because there are so many people who have moved onto campus now who are now essentially stuck here in a living situation where they have to pay an outrageous sum of money in order to live on campus or even live off campus. And now they're stuck here and they have nowhere to go, but they have no other choice because they've already put that money down. Mm-hmm. And now they have to sit here, you know, in a dorm and take online classes when they could have taken them from the safety of their home. And not have been, you know, exposed to people from all over so many different states, you know, thousands and thousands of students who have just kind of come back and are just kind of, you know, I think a good way to describe it would be socially starved. You know, you have thousands of students who have basically spent the last several months, you know, forced to stay at home, essentially. And now all of a sudden they're back with all these people, all their friends, and they have to sit there and engage with them in a new way. And so I think chaotic would definitely be a very interesting way to describe things.
Well, yeah, and I know they went from like, hey, we've got like three different options for classes, and now there's like eight or nine or something like this in some kind of insane way. So now, Kyle, you guys up in East Stroudsburg, I mean, you're also, East Stroudsburg is another kind of state system of higher education, Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education University. But East Stroudsburg was early on, right? I think it might have been the second university that decided to go kind of all online. Of course, Westchester was first, and East Stroudsburg was not that long afterwards. I mean, so for you, it's a completely different angle on this. And what's this been like for you? Kyle, can you hear me? I don't know if we lost Kyle. All right, we'll take the shift. Jack, so Jack, now here's a perfect example of actually going back to going back to campus in the pandemic, is literally at the beginning of this show, Jack was logged in, but he actually had to appear kind of in one of his classes to get a little update or something like this. So Jack, I appreciate you taking time to be here tonight and all the work that you guys are doing.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So what's it, give me a sense of what's it like on the ground in at Temple?
Well, today was our first day of classes. Of course, we planned an action for today because we wanted to kind of seize the momentum of the first day, all the excitement. So we held a protest. I think I just cut out there for a sec. But so we essentially planned a protest that included medical professionals, community members, students, teachers, to kind of talk about how Temple still has not shut down campus. And it's a little bit of a different issue at Temple because of their situation, you know, geographically. We're right in the middle of a North Philadelphia community yep. that is oftentimes right up against, you know, our student body. We're, you know, they're exposed to us frequently. Before our first day of class, on the weekends, there were kids, you know, seen out and about without masks for the, you know, it's the same on every single college campus because of the, you know, socially starved term that I'll reuse. But so we held a little protest where we had different speakers. And it seems that we have a lot of support for the closing of campus.
Well, it seems to me like that, especially that is true. I mean, I like the way that you situated that, like at Temple, but you're talking about like the university is literally embedded in the neighborhood, right? And you know, again, this has been the cause of kind of many different kind of struggles back and forth, like over the history of the university. But it also means being in that kind of urban environment right next to other neighborhoods is that, you know, the chance of like bringing students back from all over the country, really. On campus has the real potential of that becoming a hotspot and then kind of resulting in kind of community spread. So you're really talking about a situation in which students and faculty and staff and the community all have a direct and immediate interest in what's going on there.
Absolutely. And even medical professionals as well. But it was really striking to hear different community members and the medical professionals talk about kind of the dangers that already existed to them. And now that there's this massive influx of extra students in the area, just absolute fear. I mean, it was kind of striking to see these, you know, adults just talking openly about how scared they are, about how they've lost, you know, close family members, how they've lost, you know, like direct parents, cousins, things like that. It's just really irresponsible of Temple to put their profits over people in this way.
So let me ask you, I mean, given this, I'm really curious about this. I wanted to start with you. I'm glad we kind of actually got a little delay because, of course, everyone is kind of dealing with every little technical issue we could possibly be dealing with, fourfold over, right? And I'm sure that the interwebs are being taxed as we speak to as well, but just the sheer load and all of our locations. But one of the things that I found kind of most interesting, and I'll give you a little background here, is like at Kutztown University, where I teach, it seems that you have a group of faculty members, you have a group of students, you have a group of staff members who are all concerned about the moving back, except these are the folks that are not getting the support, say, for example, from, you know, representative bodies, like for example, like the student government body, for even for the faculty union. Like, for example, we had a petition that was going out in our faculty union at Kutztown would not support the petition because it said, if you don't make sure things are safe, then this is going to be the basis of a vote of no confidence. So they wouldn't sign on to that. That is a totally different situation at Temple, where you have, I saw this in the news, I think today or yesterday, your even Student Government Association basically joined in and signed on with asking Temple to shut down. Is that right?
Absolutely. It didn't happen right away, I will say that. At first, our student government and our teachers union was not fully on board. And that's a continuing struggle. Our coalition has a number of different concerns that we're pushing for beyond just, you know, shutting down campus and moving to all virtual. But we were lucky enough that they did eventually come around and realize that, I mean, especially for the teachers union, they are literally putting their teachers' lives at risk. Temple has a policy in place currently where teachers are not allowed to cancel classes, even if they know that a student who had the virus yep. was in their class. They still can't autonomously make the decision to cancel classes until Temple examines the situation and then comes down with a ruling on whether they can cancel it or not. They're literally sending these teachers to their deaths, potentially. So it was nice to see that the teachers union came around. It was exciting to be able to work with them at last. The student government as well, it was really exciting to get their vote, because that kind of meant that Temple's position that, you know, students want this, you know, was bogus, because our elected officials in our student government, you know, just flatly said that, no, you know, we don't want this.
Mm-hmm. It's great. Well, this is like, you know, one more question I have for you before I want to go to Kyle next, because I think this is a kind of a good connection. How have you all been negotiating the different kinds of impacts for different constituencies on campus? Like, so for example, you know, from the faculty perspective, that's one thing. For students' perspective, another one. But then I know there's real concerns, and what we keep on hearing at a range of universities is like, well, if everything goes all virtual, right, then that means that your custodial staff, your secretarial staff, and the food service workers are going to be put out of work, right? And that at my university, they're actually using that as a way to kind of say, no, at all costs, we have to keep things open. So I'm curious what that conversation has looked like on the ground for you.
Absolutely. So of course, it starts with a lot of listening. But what it comes back to in every single circumstance, whether it's a teacher, a janitor, a food service worker, is they're asking us to come in, you know, for dollars and cents. But if you are out of work for a certain period of time, that's awful, but it's not a tragedy. We're looking to avoid tragedies. We're looking to avoid the deaths of teachers. We're looking to avoid funerals for students, funerals for janitors, food service workers, any walk of life of anyone who's really connected to or in the campus area. It has been a conversation that we've had internally, whether we should kind of take this position. But after talking to different community members and even talking to different workers, you know, today we had several food service workers in attendance who have been in communication with our group. It's really a very unanimous vote, and it's given us a lot of confidence to be able to continue forward and kind of cleared our minds a little bit because, I mean, you're right. If this happens, jobs will be lost. Mm-hmm. But if this happens, lives won't be lost.
Well, and I think that, you know, one of the things that I think that we need to be pushing, like, kind of pretty directly out there, is the fact that the reason why we're pitting lives against jobs right now is because we have a completely dysfunctional society and government, right, that refuses to provide the safety net, like, for those folks. So people literally are choosing between, say, their lives or their paycheck. And that is not, like, that's not because things went online. That's because we have lived with, like, what, 40 years of kind of austerity, 40 years of the destruction of the public sphere, of defunding education and anything that is about kind of a public good. I mean, we even see, like, you know, unemployment benefits running out in the middle of a freaking pandemic. We can't get Medicare for all, like, in the middle of a pandemic, right? I mean, so, you know, in my mind, it's like, that's where, the concerns be. So instead of, like, pitting it against each other, why is it not, you know, these folks, like, especially in leadership positions, even presidents of universities, for that matter, say, making absolute demands upon a kind of elected officials to make sure that everybody is taken care of, right? So this is one of the things that, you know, of the conversation. Kyle, are you with us now?
Yes, I am.
Kyle, you on?
Yes.
All right. Awesome. So, because one of the things that about this is, you know, you're coming at this from a real different situation. Like I said on in the intro, East Stroudsburg shut down early.
Yes.
Right. So your organizing that you're doing right now with food service workers at East Stroudsburg University isn't mm-hmm. just simply saying, like, okay, no, look, we need to be safe. And, like, it's coming at a whole different ballgame. And in some sense, your organizing efforts have been certainly kind of challenged by not being able to be on campus and doing the organizing, right?
Yes, very. They've been outstandingly a lot more challenging, especially because, you know, once again, we're not on campus. And as you know, it's a lot harder, especially when you're not seeing, you know, these food workers just day to day, just seeing them face to face every single day. When you go in the cafeteria, when you go to like any of our little eat out spots and things like that. But we found a way to do it mostly through Zoom. Is how we got most of our organizing done for the most part. It was a lot more challenging, but you know, to me, it's always worth the fight.
Well, and so here's what I'm really curious. I'm dying to talk to you about this. I've been begging, you know, kind of, we have a mutual friend between us. Ben was like, you know, who's been telling me about the work that you all are doing. And I am just astounded in many ways that how effective you've been doing. And you have this document that you helped. I want you to give us some context of how this document came to be, because basically it is a demand for solidarity with kind of all workers, food service workers in particular, right? Mm-hmm. And saying that, you know, okay, yes, we recognize that there's going to be an impact on these food service workers because of this pandemic, right? And these are food service workers who are in the process of organizing a union. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have a group of students who decided, yep, we're going to stand with them and we're going to insist that the demand is bigger than just let's keep us safety. But the demand is to actually kind of make the campus one that kind of privileges solidarity at its core. So walk me through mm-hmm. that kind of whole process of that you all been doing up there with the Student Solidarity Committee.
So the first thing with the Student Solidarity Committee, the first thing at least that was on our agenda was awareness. A lot of people really didn't know that, you know, food workers didn't have just basic things such as paid sick leave. We didn't know that, you know, they didn't have things like inadequate cleaning supplies. They didn't have proper staffing numbers and things like that. These are all just like basic things that all workers should have. And a lot of people were really just unaware that these are the things that our food workers were going through. I think it was Malcolm X who said that, you know, somebody can have a cut, but if they don't know that the cut is there and if they don't know that it exists, how can they treat a cut that isn't there? So the first thing that was very important was just awareness. Like, we need to get it out to everybody that, hey, our food workers are not in a good position right now. And when our food workers are in a bad position, that sort of puts us students in a bad position also. At least the way I embody my philosophy and things like that is I see it as everybody, especially in the East Charlesburg community, we all contribute to each other in one way or another. So when we do bad onto somebody else on our campus, we're sort of doing bad onto ourselves. And when we do good onto somebody else on our campus, we're also doing good for ourselves. So we sort of seen it as like, yeah, if our food workers aren't in a good position right now, once again, that puts us in a bad position because they're just members and not even just normal members. They're like very important members of our community. These are the people who feed us every single day. I can certainly say as a college student, I don't feel like getting up and cooking every morning before all my classes are even cooking or making food in between classes. Like, heck, sometimes I'm like, I'm too wrapped up in work to go grab a bag of chips or something. So it's to me, it's just like a huge blessing to be able to have like a huge staff that's willing to step up and do those things for us. So yeah, awareness is just like the first thing. And after awareness came, it was really just getting out the message and just letting people know, once again, exactly just what was going on. We were putting out the petition, and if any modifications needed to be made, we were taking feedback. We made Instagram pages, Facebook pages, anything, and then social media realm, you name it, we were pretty much on top of it. And just once again, getting out the message and just sending the link out to people. Hey, do you know 4 people that are going to sign this petition? Sure. Okay. Tell them to send it to 4 more people, and just getting more and more people as much as we possibly can actually to know about these issues. And basically just to hop on board. And so, you know, our food workers get the proper treatment that they deserve.
Matt, I love the way that you all are talking about it, and very similar to kind of what, very similar to what we were just kind of talking about with Jack too, as well, about having these actual conversations with people. And I remember like last week's show, I talked to organizers from the Philly-based Racial Justice Organizing Committee, Tamara Anderson and Dana Carter. And one of the things that we were talking about is like, you know, for a long time, we've been told that when we think about who we need to be speaking to and who we need to be looking to for our conversations, it's these people that are like, you know, celebrities or those in power and all that kind of stuff. And you see more and more people coming to the realization that the people actually we need to be discussing things with and actually having the conversations with are the people that are directly in our communities, like whether it's the custodial workers, whether it's the sanitation workers, whether it's the, you know, the food service workers, that these are the folks that we need to be connecting with if we're ever going to kind of build any kind of long-term power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and I think that that document, the SWORD document, is like, I think is just a standout. I really think that this is one of the reasons I wanted to kind of have this in this context to be talking about it, is I think this is something that other folks need to be looking to as well, as a way of beginning to articulate that kind of solidarity at a very kind of a baseline level. And of course, you know, organizing gets the goods. I mean, with the card check stuff, the card track neutrality, that is an
yes.
huge.
Yes. I'm still having trouble just processing everything as of right now.
My God, that's great. Well, Nick, so let me talk a little bit about, let's go back to say, we go from say an organizing effort at Temple where we see kind of all these different groups kind of working together pretty actively now. And it was, again, as Jack said, it was a process, to what we see kind of at East Stroudsburg where you're actually kind of seeing some of these concrete victories. Kutztown has been, and I could vouch for this too as well, as you said, it's been chaos. It's been chaotic. I remember back, you know, maybe you could take us back a little bit about what, when we're talking about the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights, say then and now, right? What was the original goal of the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights, and how has that evolved to kind of take on what we're seeing right now and take on this this kind of pandemic and the decision to move back to campus?
Yeah, well, to go off that, I just want to kind of go back to what you said at the very beginning of this podcast. You were kind of explaining that the work we were doing was both because of and despite of the global pandemic going on. And I think that's an absolutely perfect way of describing things that have been going on. It was all the way back in February, I know I started meeting with you and several other student organizers, as well as, you know, faculty members. And, you know, we got together and we sort of recognized that we have serious issues at our school. You know, we have food service workers who aren't being taken care of or being taken seriously. We have residence halls which have mold in them, which have bed bugs in them, which have had Legionellas in them. We have all these problems in the residence halls. And then obviously your own story with, you know, some of the academic buildings and them having mold. It's a very shameful display, to say the least, of so many of these problems, which just are not being addressed, are not being discussed, are basically just swept underneath the rug in an attempt to just not even talk about them. And so I think for me, when I first got involved a few months ago, the whole thing with the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights that stood out to me was the idea of fighting for something, not just fighting against something. You know, I can sit here and I can say I disagree with Hawkinson's decision on certain things, but it's not just going out here and saying that, you know, I want things to be a little bit better. This is, I mean, I feel like I'm actually fighting for a situation that I want to live in. I feel like I'm fighting for a situation that everybody has a certain right to live in. You know, everyone has a right to a healthy campus where they can show up and they can work, they can live, you know, they can exist on this campus without having to literally fear for their life in the case of the pandemic. You know, these are issues which didn't just start when you and I started talking about how we can fix them. These are issues which have been going on for years, if not decades. You know, they've gone on through different administrations. They've gone on, you know, through people could literally come here, work an entire career here, and then retire, and there would still probably be some issues which haven't been addressed. And quite frankly, that is, in my view, unacceptable. And that's I personally feel like that's why I wanted to get involved, is because I wanted to fight for a future that I could really connect with. And going forward now towards the pandemic, organizing in spite of it, or rather despite it, is really kind of centered around all of these problems of lack of transparency and just a general lack of concern for other human beings has really, really shown its ugliest possible head here. It has just kind of come out and shown everything that students' lives are not as important as you would think that they would be to the people who collect salaries literally from us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the fact that they were willing to bring people on campus with a policy which I'm sure that you've talked ad nauseum about, but a policy which has no real means of enforcing some of its key elements, such as universal masks in any kind of common space. There's just no way to enforce that. They didn't put that in the plan. They haven't prepared for that. Expecting students or staff to come in and clean their rooms as well. I was actually writing an article for the Keystone the other day, and I talked about how professors, if they will have one class right after the other, they have roughly 10 minutes to get from that one class to the other class, as I'm sure you're well aware. Mm-hmm. And now, in addition to that time of making sure that their stuff is prepared and that they can help any student who approaches them after class with any kind of thing that they need to talk about, you now have to help them. You now have to walk to your next class. You now have to clean your particular area, and also make sure that all the students clean their areas and clean their areas if they don't. And then on top of that, you have to get to your class, you have to show up, and then you have to make sure that there's no one in that class who isn't wearing a mask. And if you see someone who isn't wearing a mask, you now have to go through and talk to them and try to figure out, hey, please put it on. And if they say no, okay, well then you have the opportunity to dismiss that class and then quickly convert it online within 10 minutes.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm almost done. It's asinine how long of a laundry list that you have to do in 10 minutes. On top of that, you'd have to write down anyone's information so that you can then report them to the administration so that they can then receive disciplinary action. All of this should not be your responsibility. This is not something that A, can be done in 10 minutes, or B, should be done in 10 minutes by one individual. The fact that you're responsible for so much is quite frankly unacceptable, because when I came to Kutztown, I was in the understanding that I would be living in a safe building, that I would be going to a safe classroom, but I knew that it wasn't up to you to make sure that that was the case, that it was a safe learning environment. It's your job to teach me and to educate me and to make me a better, more productive citizen, right? It's not your job to keep me safe. That's the people who I'm paying the money to. That's their job.
Well, and I think this is one of the things about when kind of coming to organizing and kind of how we find our ways to where we are, because, I certainly, when I first started at Kutztown, it's like, I'm composition rhetoric is the area that I teach, right? So I thought I would be teaching, teaching writing and teaching kind of rhetorical theory and kind of the relationships between social movements and rhetoric and all this kind of stuff, right? That's where I started with. I didn't think I was going to have to become a kind of expert on black mold. Having to figure out, right, how you address black mold in buildings, and then when you're getting no responses back from the administration, how you actually gonna have to organize and take on a secondary job, right, which is actually just holding these people kind of to account. I'm thinking about, and I'm curious. This is kind of one of the things that I'm really interested in getting all of your perspective on. This is because, I look at what happened today or yesterday. I can't remember if it was yesterday or yesterday with the postal workers, right? Is that there's been stories all over the place about how mailboxes have been removed and the kind of these high speed letter sorting machines have been taken out. But there's been a couple places in Dallas, Texas, and I want to say it wasn't Seattle. It might have been Portland. I'm not sure, but a couple of these places where you have these postal workers. Who they just said, they were told, right, by their bosses in D.C., remove these high-speed letter sorters. And they just said, no, we're not going to. And in some other cases, we're starting to find out that when they did disconnect them, they're like, why did we do that? We're going to reconnect them back ourselves, right? And so I'm curious what the experience has been like for each of you in your kind of in your organizing endeavors. Is like dealing with, or have you dealt with, that sense where people just want to kind of like, they think that if they're just nice and maybe they keep their head down and they just take care of themselves and they just, you know, they try to be reasonable about things, that everything will be fine. Right. That they don't want to stick their head out, that they don't want to kind of like disrupt things. They don't want their kind of like, they don't want to feel the discomfort. And it seems to me is like the only way that we get the goods is to kind of like to step out of our comfort zones and actually kind of like, you know, take power. So I'm curious what that process has been like for each of you in your context. I don't know if anybody wants to go first on that.
I'll go.
Jack, how about you?
Well, I was actually staying quiet a little bit because on my end, I haven't really encountered a lot of people who haven't been extraordinarily motivated to enact change on a number of issues. The group kind of came together as a result of, you know, it was just really motivated students and teachers and community members, and they all just wanted to enact change. They were tired of, and this might be part of the reason they were tired of, you know, decades of gentrification and just ignorance by Temple University on a number of issues. So as we started to tackle issues like, you know, their relationship with the multinational food conglomerate Aramark, or kind of changing their election process, our president stepping down, changing their election process to become representative and democratic, I didn't really find that there were a lot of people who thought that things would improve if they kept their head down and, you know, metaphorically installed or deinstalled those mail systems. I actually kind of found the opposite, where nearly everyone who I talked to or everyone who would reach out to me was all about change.
That's fantastic. And so, I mean, and you think that some of that is basically built on the kind of, like, as you said, the decades long of kind of like dealing with this stuff and getting to the point where, say, enough is enough.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, so from your angle, Kyle, what's that been like on the ESU campus?
I wish it was Jack's experience. I could only, I wish we had that experience where, you know, people were sort of acted as the grass and the movement were sort of like the wind, and the grass would just automatically bend once the wind came. I really wish it was that easy up here at East Stroudsburg. At least I found that, like, not even just with like the changes that came with the food workers, but just trying to make changes on campus in general can be a sort of a challenge, because a lot of people are afraid half of the time to make any kind of change, or a lot of people are just afraid to sort of just speak up about anything. I'm talking, like, I've had professors like come up to me personally and tell me, like, hey, it's better if you just keep your head down. This professor or this department, this dean or so-and-so, they're going to chew you up and spit you out. Like, I'm just trying to tell you this just for your own safety, or just for, you know, the betterment of you. It would be better for you to just, like, you know, just go with the flow of things and just keep everything cool and keep everything cordial. And I think it's that same exact attitude sometimes that have us, especially as a society, end up where we are as of right now. You know, people just sort of just trying to keep staying safe and keeping their head down, and not trying to, you know, kick up the dust about anything. Things are just going to, like, the bad things that are happening, they're just going to keep on prevailing. You know, it's like there are good people around, but, you know, when good people see bad things, you know, the good people should speak up. And if the good people don't speak up, then that bad thing is sort of just going to keep on happening. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at East Stroudsburg, like, all of it, for the most part, especially with the Student Solidarity Committee and everything, that's been, we didn't have too much bite back on that, honestly, but just in general, we're just trying to change things on campus. It can be quite a challenge sometimes, because once again, a lot of folks can fail to get engaged sometimes also. So that was just definitely like one of the a huge challenge along with it too. It's like, okay, how do we not only get people to care about something, but we have to get people to care about something and speak up for something when people usually sometimes don't do both of those things.
Right.
But to me, that just made the fight even more worth it, you know?
Well, and it shows you, I mean, the work that, that you all have done there too as well, that, that whole idea that people need the experience of actually taking part in collective action before they see the, I don't know, like see that as something that is good, that it is not something that threatens them, but it is actually something that dissipates the fear and gives them hope. And you know, and I think that, you know, the fact that you actually got this, this win on the car check neutrality is just amazing. Right.
Definitely.
And it also shows, you know, again, what I was astounded by, I have to admit, right. Because I mean, you know, at Kutztown and East Stroudsburg, you kind of like, you know, similar location, so to speak, we're kind of the east of Pennsylvania, kind of in rural areas, kind of, you know, definitely not kind of urban areas and stuff like that. I know folks up there through my union work over the years. And one of the things that I was going to say, like, oh, man, you got the student coalition, student solidarity committee. And there's probably kind of a few people on there. And then I looked on your Facebook page. And you did that kind of little, I mean, just a simple action, right? The simple action of holding up the hearts, like we support, we love East Stroudsburg food service workers. Mm-hmm. And you had like dozens of people on that. I was like, man, that's yes. That's what you want, right? You got to get even a dog yes. up there holding up a sign, right? <It's>
like, yes. And to me, that just showed, it honestly like surprised me a lot more because it showed me that people cared a lot more than I thought a little bit. Just going into, you know, certain things with just like my activism in the past, it can sort of seem like a lonely road sometimes. And what this showed me is like, you know, just fighting for the right thing doesn't have to be a lonely thing. It doesn't have to just be something that you pursue by yourself. And I think it's like really just a huge positive reinforcement for me to, you know, just keep continuing on, you know, just fight for the right thing. Because, you know, once again, in the past, I felt like, you know, it was really just me, just like the underdog, just fighting for, you know, just simple things or basic things that just everybody needs.
Absolutely. And so then, Nick, look, kind of like to you again, kind of like on that same question, what's that experience of like kind of organizing and doing? Because I mean, no, you did some bang up work when you're kind of working with the Bernie Sanders campaign, right? Kind of doing all, say, phone banking, all this kind of stuff. But what's that experience been like actually kind of involved with that organizing process on campus?
Nick, yeah, you there? So, yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, first off, thanks for the compliment. it was definitely not easy. When I was working for the Sanders campaign, you know, it's, I honestly, I don't even know if I could necessarily compare the kind of organizing, because obviously with the Sanders campaign, you know, it was more centered on, talking to generally like-minded people. And then trying to convince those who aren't necessarily as like-minded and, you know, obviously trying to register new voters and all of that, you know, phone banking, getting more organizers is a very large process with a very specific, kind of target for that outreach. And coming over to this campaign, I've noticed almost a completely different shift. You know, I will say that there's a certain level of, a certain lack of willingness to go out of people's way to help organize and do collective action. And quite frankly, I think that has to do pretty heavily with the fact that students here just aren't used to it as much as they might be at other universities. I mean, Kutztown. You know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't have a very long history of collective action against our administration. It's generally speaking more of a you come, you get your degree, and you go, and you do other things in the rest of the world. But what I've noticed is that just about every single student who I talk to about these issues, you know, if they live on campus, I talk to them about the mold in the academic buildings. Or if they're a food service worker, you know, I talk to them about how other places, you know, the food service workers have things like unions and you know, they obviously have certain living wages on different universities. And just about every person I've spoken to is instantly interested, is instantly turned on by the idea of seeing change. And quite frankly, I think it's a very happy and emotional thing for me to see the movement grow as much as it did before the pandemic hit. Because I remember over the course of a little more than a month, we went from 5 people in one room to having over 500 signatures on our petition. Mm-hmm. We had 30 people in a town hall. We had a team of organizers who were ready to put in the work, and I know I was willing to work with them to take our signatures from 500 to 2,000 within a 2-week period, speaking to every single classroom that would let us in. It was astonishing how quickly we were able to grow when we were physically. And then obviously we hit a huge roadblock with COVID and having to stay at home and not being able to organize in person. But it still amazes me that we've still powered through that we've managed to accomplish so much. I know we recently had a Zoom town hall where we had something like, I think it was almost 100 people had registered for it. Which is amazing because, I mean, as I'm sure anyone who's been on a Zoom call knows, it's you're pretty much going to divide however many people you would normally have by 4 or 5, and that's how many people you would have show up. So I think it's quite frankly amazing to see the kind of work that is still going on, the fact that people are still so interested in not only countering the COVID response, but also countering the response to all kinds of other issues. Whether that be the mold in the buildings, for example, or Legionella's in the showers, stuff like that, I think is really just absolutely influential. And for me personally, I know when I started hearing about all these problems, in a different way, because I know I was actually in your class, I think it was a full year ago. And I remember you distinctly pointed to a spot in the ceiling and then you moved a ceiling tile and showed the black mold that was present. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, that's terrible, but it's probably only in this one classroom or only in this one building. And, I was angry and I was upset that it was there, but to a certain extent, I was like, well, you know what, maybe it's just going to have to be there. It'll get resolved eventually. And as I've started talking to you and talking to all kinds of other people who have been having problems, I've come to realize that mold in buildings is just a small fraction of the problems at the university that need to be addressed and that have simply not been addressed and will not be addressed unless we come together in a collective action and make them get addressed. If we don't come together and we don't exercise our power, then they're not going to listen to us because we're already paying their salaries anyway.
No, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the story I told at our town hall once was about how when I first started at Kutztown back in 2002, and I was teaching a summer class. So I guess it was 2003 when I was teaching the summer class, and I kind of came in the middle of the summer, and I was walking through the hall of my building, and the walls looked like they were, I don't know, they were like, they were primed the walls, they're getting ready to repaint, so they primed all the walls and stuff, and I was like, it's hot, it's all this stuff. And I ran into one of the older faculty members and I was like, hey, Dennis, I think his name was. I think he was like, hey, I'm like, why are the walls all gray? He's like, are they doing painting in here? And he's like, oh, nah, that's just the mold. It gets like this every summer. Right? And I'm like, that's not a funny story. that's horrendous. And it took us about 4 years to get to the point where they actually were putting in these massive dehumidifiers just to acknowledge that there was a problem, right, that could have health implications. And then they put those in. Those dehumidifiers are still there, right? And then it took us, another 10 years, almost 10 years. It's disgusting, right, to get them to adequately begin to address, the persistent leaks and black mold and the mice in the ceilings and things like this that they were dealing with, right? And it's like, it's that the idea of asking politely and the idea of kind of sitting by and waiting for things to take place, waiting for the system to work, just doesn't work. Right. So let me just say this. Number one, Does anybody who's kind of join here, wants to call in, has got a perspective you want to add here, you got any questions for anybody that's here, feel free. You should have the bottom of your app, if you're listening on the Podbean app, there's a little call-in button. You can just click on that. It'll show up on my screen, and I'd love to hear of any perspectives and thoughts that people may have. Also, I want to remind you that you can help support this show becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. And you can show us a love right here in that Podbean app by just kind of hitting that little gift icon and getting up some golden beans and sending us a little, you know, tip in the tip jar to help keep us stuff going. I'll stick with you, Nick, as a way of kind of directing and sort of wrapping up. And if we get any calls, we'll kind of obviously privilege those. But looking forward. So I'm kind of curious what hear from each of you about kind of where you're at right now in your campaign and what you want. Number one, just what's happening right now in terms of the organizing, kind of put us like in the moment. And then number two, what the kind of like, say, the asks or the plugs that you want to give to anybody who's going to be listening to either the show live or on a podcast about what you like to for them to know about what's happening with your organizing, and then where you go from here and anything that people could do for you. So, Nick, let's start with you. Give us a sense of kind of where things at right now and kind of where they're going to go. What do you want to plug?
Sure. So I guess to say where things are right now is kind of reconciling with the current situation in the sense that people are now on campus. And so for the last several months, you know, we've been organizing exclusively digitally. And so I know personally, I am planning on kind of shifting my own focus towards, a slightly more physical thing in the sense that I am planning on speaking in several professors' actual on-campus physical classrooms to kind of talk about some of the issues that we've been addressing, trying to get more information out there, trying to educate more people. And of course, I will be taking the petition around with me to make sure that anyone who wants to sign can sign. Mm-hmm. And then also going forward, there's going to be a town hall at some point, I believe either at the end of next week or the beginning of the following, where we will be essentially going over these very same problems in greater detail. I believe that there's going to be two town halls. There's going to be one kind of physically outside, social distance, and there should also be a second one, which is going to be digitally, probably over Zoom or webinar or something like that. Just to make sure that people who are on campus are able to get as close to a normal experience as possible, while also ensuring that those who are not there physically or who don't feel comfortable going out in a crowd like that are able to still engage, and still be able to hear these issues and to discuss their own perspectives. Because obviously the whole point of this movement is to make sure that voices are no longer silenced, to make sure that every voice is listened to. To make sure that we have a collective, to make sure that everyone is listened to. And so I would say right now, the town halls are going to be a very big thing. And also I would say going forward, we're working on a social media campaign where we will be pushing out all kinds of factual information about problems that are going on. And we're also going to be working on a video campaign where we're going to be kind of recording this very same information that'll be written down in like articles, for example. Mm-hmm. And we're going to push that out in video form all over social media to make sure that it's seen by people who wouldn't see our usual posts. I also know that I'm currently waiting for an article that I've been writing to get released on the Keystone, which is the university's newspaper. So that should hopefully be released either this week or next week. That is exclusively about the reopening plan. And it is a little bit of a comparison to UNC's opening plan and obviously what happened there. And so those are kind of the things that I have going on right now. I know that there are tons of other people in this movement who also have things that they're doing. But as of right now, I think that the best way to describe our current situation? Is it readapting? Because obviously, you know, we had a more conventional organizing focus at first, and then we had to switch and adapt. And then now we're going to have to kind of readapt to this new kind of hybrid system. And, you know, obviously organizers who are more comfortable, you know, talking in larger areas are going to be able to organize differently than those who are not. And obviously there are some people who are not on campus or who are, you know, professors like yourself who are obviously teaching remotely. So, you know, we have to kind of tackle those issues. But I would say definitely look forward to seeing both kinds of organizing going forward.
Excellent. And so what's like on the ground there with you, Kyle? Where's the organizing at right now? What are you kind of working on? What are kind of plugs in kind of where things are going?
So now that, you know, we got the card check situation with the food union, a lot of folks might sort of consider our fight over. But, you know, to me, the fight is far from over. If anything, you know, it just began. When we talk about, like, you know, the sword plan and everything, it actually includes like the swords and our shields, because, you know, our mascot is the warrior. And I'll sort of put it as, you know, just because we got a fraction of the things that we wanted at the moment, that does not mean we put down our shields. We always have to keep our shields up just in case, you know, something may happen that may not go, you know, everyone's way, sort of. I'll sort of have to watch everything I sort of say, because, you know, Aramark, we got the agreement, so I can't really quote unquote trash Aramark at the moment. But yeah, as of right now, we're really just focusing on getting everybody on board and just sharing the news with everybody, and thanking everybody who supported us along the way. And once again, just really just looking out and just keeping a sharp eye out and keeping our eyes just peeled for any kind of slick moves that you know who might want to pull in the near future. And one thing that I really want to, I guess, get out there to everybody who may be listening is never be afraid to stand up or fight for something that you know is right. Especially, you know, if you have kids, or if you plan on having kids, or just for anybody in a near future who may be able to look back at these things, you'll want to be on the right side of history. And more than just like on the sake of just like being right, you really just want to just, I would say, spread the notion of just doing right by everybody that's around you. Once again, I think is very important that you take care of the people around you. If you really just want to see improvements to everybody's life and also your life as a person too.
That's awesome. And finally, Jack, so where are things at in kind of Temple right now? Where is this organizing go? And, you know, and maybe something you mentioned this kind of right at the get-go, is that the Student Coalition for Change is not kind of thought of as, you know, simply about let's stop the reopening plans, but you have a kind of broader vision too as well. So I'm curious kind of where you're at right now, where's that organizing right now, and kind of where you see this movement going at Temple from here?
Well, you know, to put you in the moment, and where we're at right now. So we just finished our in-person action earlier today that I described earlier. And right now, as we do after most of our in-person actions, we're kind of reviewing the press coverage of it. We're looking at different videos, articles, and we are trying to kind of push out coverage of it on our social medias. One of the things that I do for my coalition is I manage our social media team. We have a really talented design team that kind of works to create content, and they work along with our research team, who's also extremely talented. So, and within the last, you know, few weeks or so, that's part of what we were attempting to establish the most. We wanted to set up our team. We wanted to set up a strong way of communicating between various teams within our organization. But like you said, we are not just focused on the closing of campus. The reason that we started in the first place was to focus on defunding Temple Police and having Temple divest from the Philadelphia Police Foundation. The latter we accomplished, the former we are still working on, we're still hard at work on. But in addition, we are constantly focusing on things like Aramark. We just finished a Aramark initiative where we had a five-day social media campaign to inform our followers about kind of the atrocities that Aramark has committed throughout their history. It's a massive list of atrocities, including just complete ignorance of like rape allegations, signing massive contracts with prisons, and then using unconvicted workers as laborers that they don't pay a single cent. They're literally, I don't need to get into Aramark, but that's kind of the feel for what our organization is doing. We're looking at the relationships the temple has, the decisions the temple makes, and we're analyzing them, and we're calling them out for the incorrect decisions and the inhumane partners that they seek to work with. As the little plug thing that you recommended, on Twitter, we are at Temple Coalition, and on Instagram, we are Temple Coalition for Change. Super easy. And within our Twitter and our Instagram, we have, of course, a link tree where you can find all relevant petitions, documents, links to town halls when we hold them. We've held a few of those. That's where we're at right now.
Well, fantastic. And I think I've always remembered one of the lessons from doing early organizing work, when I was a student, grad student, so on like this, is once you start asking the question, you start seeing the university for its parts, and I start looking at things like contracts, right? Like, then it suddenly takes on a whole different, like, world, right? You start seeing the university in a very different way. And it's like, I've always thought, and again, this is not true of only universities. I want to be very clear about this. But once you start looking at those kinds of relationships, those relationship power, and start mapping the power of any institution, organization, or workplace that you're part of, or community for that matter, you start seeing things in a different way, right? And in many cases, I remember the first time, talking to students who were organizing with United Students Against Sweatshops when I was still a student. Right. And then suddenly being able to say, like, hey, we're not just going to look at like the brand of the university. We're going to ask the question of like, what are the contracts that are involved with selling that shirt? And I remember my mind going, what? I was kind of flipping around and being like, oh, yeah. You see the world in a whole different place than that. Like, after you see that.
Much sadder place, but yeah.
Yeah, it's one that kind of it's targeted at the root, I guess. It's one of these things too, as well. It's like, this kind of pulls things out in a kind of much more abstract way. But I always think about this as like, when we're confronted, especially people who are kind of like, trying to do good things in the world and trying to kind of find places that are struggle for change, they're always kind of saying, there's like, we have neoliberalism, or we have global capitalism, or we have corporate rule, right? And those things are all true. Right. But how the hell do you fight that stuff? Right. Because it's an idea and an abstraction at this kind of global level. And it could very quickly lead to a certain kind of cynicism. But when you realize that actually those exact dynamics are like literally down the street from you. Right. In your workplace, in your community, in the ways that, our workshops have been contracted out about the way, so much of our lives have been kind of affected this, then you start then suddenly instead of thinking about this, like having to kind of like work on the global scale, you can just actually, work on the institution that you're in, right? You can fight on the shop floor, on the campus floor, right? And in your community against those very same things because they've infected our lives to such a degree. But who the hell am I? Well, listen, I want to thank all of you for kind of tuning in here and joining us here. And I'm sorry for the technical glitches at the start of the show. It's also folks that are kind of listening to this. You won't hear so much of that. But it was it's been a great to kind of connect. And I hope that as things kind of progress on each of the campuses that you kind of let me know about this. I'd love to have any of you back on for any reason to highlight stuff, to dig down even more deeper. It'd be absolutely fantastic. But for now, I wish you all kind of one, thank you for coming on the show tonight. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for the invite.
Yeah. And then secondly, here's to the struggle ahead. Right. And to kind of to stay safe. Together, I think that we have a real opportunity at this moment in history to make such significant and transformational change. And like, I have never seen it happen in my life. And I thank God, like, well, the old gods are the new, to put it that way, for all of you, because I don't know if you hear this enough from people who are kind of like, you know, the oldies like me. But, you know, for those of us who have been fighting these fights for, you know, for as long as I can remember, since I was in high school, and feeling often disparaged at times, to see a kind of, say, generations of folks coming up with the kind of, you know, the freaking, the guts, the energy, and the drive, right? Basically makes me make sure I've got a nice little chunk of change for bail money always at hand. That's all I'm saying. All right. So, I mean, thank you for all the work that you're doing. You know, I just want you all to know too, as well, that you give people like me hope too, as well, that all the fights for all the years is worth it, because eventually we end up where we're at right now. So thank you all.
Got it.
All right. So, hey, everybody, thank you for tuning in. And for all of you who are going to tune in on the podcast, sorry you could enjoy the conversation tonight. But next week we'll be back. I just do want to let everybody know that there may be a time change for our regular Monday our live show. We might be moving it to 9 o'clock. My daughter's soccer has started, and then they sprung a Monday night practice on us like literally yesterday. So I'm like, oh man. So I literally dropped off my daughter like at her soccer thing, found somebody else to be willing to take her home, and then got in this seat to talk to everybody here tonight like 5 minutes before I set out. So that's going to change the future. So I'm not sure what we're going to have on the show next week, but look for it at a little bit of later time. And I just want to show thank you all for tuning in. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. You can help support this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a member for a little $5 a month. Thank you all. Stay in the fight, stay in the struggle. See you next week.